Colorado has seen more than 1,400 deaths from COVID-19, according to data released earlier this week from the State Department of Public Health and Environment.
But tracking the death toll of something like coronavirus has its challenges. After all, what if someone dies without knowing they have COVID-19? Or what if someone puts off going to the hospital for a heart attack out of fear of getting the virus? Should those deaths be included in the official tally of the pandemic?
That's the subject of Markian Haraluk's recent reporting. He's the senior Colorado correspondent for Kaiser Health News, and he joins us now. Markian, welcome to Colorado Edition.
Hi, Erin. Thanks for having me.
Your article opens with the story of the death of Sarah Whitner from Broomfield. Could you tell us what happened to her?
Sarah was a lovely, young, talented woman. She was a singer who was working for a healthcare advocacy group here in Colorado. And she had, through her life, struggled with drug addiction. But she seemed to have gotten things under control. After a relapse in December, she had gone through a detox program and was put on a medication, a monthly shot, which would block her opioid cravings. And it was important for her because she was getting married and she wanted to start a family. And so she was looking for a medication that would allow her to get pregnant once they were ready. And the shot seemed to be working well for her. She had gotten two of these monthly injections and was doing well. And then the COVID pandemic hit. And of course, once that hit, things started to be a lot tougher for Sarah. She couldn't get her monthly shot on the same schedule. Her appointment got pushed back 2 weeks. And in addition, all the sort of supports that she had created around herself to help her deal with her addiction started to kind of fall away. She couldn't go to Narcotics Anonymous meetings. She couldn't meet with friends to discuss what was going on through her life and over a cup of coffee. She couldn't meet with her sponsor. And she'd moved back in with her parents during that time, during the lockdown. And what they finally found out happened was about, a week after she was supposed to get her monthly injection, she relapsed. She started using again on Easter Sunday was the first time. She used again two more times that week, and she was almost to the point of her appointment. But the day before her appointment, she had, was sleeping in late, according to her sister. Her sister thought that, she hadn't come out of her room. And so she went in to go wake her up, and she found Sarah lying in bed, blood pooling on one side of her body. She's still clutching a syringe in one hand. And she had overdosed. Her family believes it was a fentanyl overdose. They tried CPR. They called the paramedics who arrived in full hazmat gear because of COVID, but it was too late. Sarah had died. And so Sarah's example is kind of what this story was all about, was what is a COVID death? How are we going to determine whether a death was caused by a pandemic? Sarah never had COVID. She was never tested positive for the virus. She never had any symptoms. But, her family argues COVID killed her as much as any of these other people who have tragically died during this pandemic. If not for the circumstances created by the lockdown and the pandemic itself, Sarah might still be alive today.
I think her story really does illustrate the difficulty of counting the death toll. Can you talk about who is currently included in the COVID-19 death count?
Yeah, and that's a tricky question to answer because it varies so much from state to state, from county to county. In general, the numbers that are being reported, the numbers that we hear on a daily basis, those are the people that have tested positive and died with COVID. So it could be that they died directly from the infection, or it could be that they died with the infection, but due to another cause. And there's sort of two systems, the way that we count these deaths. One is sort of a quick and dirty, let's get real-time information so we can track the trends and see what's going on. So anybody who tests positive for COVID, that's a notifiable disease. Their doctor, the health department, has to notify the authorities that this person tested positive for COVID. And then we track those people to see how many of those people died. It's not 100% accurate. There could be people who tested positive and then died for some other reason, a car accident, for example, or a heart attack or a stroke that would have happened regardless of COVID. But we also miss, you know, all these people who have COVID but have never been tested, and they die because of COVID because they died at home and nobody ever realized that they had COVID.
I noticed, you know, midway through the pandemic, Colorado began tracking the deaths differently. There were deaths due to COVID and deaths among cases, which seemed like an important step toward more transparency.
Absolutely. And I think there was some criticism that Colorado was somehow, you know, cooking the books on the numbers or trying to exaggerate the extent of it. And what it was really was this difficulty of really knowing who has died from COVID, who hasn't died from COVID. And so what a lot of states have done, and particularly some of the national experts take this approach, is to look at excess deaths, where we say, you know, we know from years and years and years of data, how many people die from a heart attack every year? How many people die from strokes every year? And we can, with fairly good accuracy, predict how many people should die this year, unless something extraordinary happens, like COVID-19 this year. So the difference between the sort of the total numbers of deaths and the expected number of deaths becomes this sort of excess number. And that captures so much more than what we know just from testing and death records.
You know, maybe it's time to just ask this question. Why is it important to know the full death toll?
Yeah, I asked that of pretty much everybody I interviewed as well, because that was an interesting question to me as well. The answer I got was mainly, you know, it's sort of an allocation of resources question. We allocate resources depending on how big a problem is. And so, you know, if you look at things like healthcare spending for cancer, we put more money into breast cancer and lung cancer and prostate cancer, which are very common, less money into some of the rare diseases that aren't going to impact as many people. And it's the same with our public health response. How much money do we need to put forth to, first of all, address the ongoing concerns of COVID? You know, we haven't even completed our first wave here. We might have multiple waves coming down the pike. We also have all these unintended sort of consequences of our lockdown, where people haven't been going to get treatment, and so they've put off care for their chronic conditions, and that bill is going to come due later this year as well. Those cases will start coming. So we need to know how much money we need to allocate for the size of the problem. But we also need to think about the next pandemic. And, you know, I know we're not out of this one yet. It's kind of hard to think forward. But, you know, public health experts have been talking about the next pandemic for decades. We knew something was coming, and something will come again. It might be 10, 20 years. It might be another 100 years before we see something again the size of COVID. But we need to know sort of what the impact of this disease is, so we can decide, well, how much money do we want to put towards preparing for the next one versus building roads and bridges or providing a tax cut to people or any other sort of spending priority.
Mark Ian Harluck is the senior Colorado correspondent for Kaiser Health News. You can find a link to his article on the COVID-19 death toll at KUNC.org. Mark Ian, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Aaron. It was a pleasure.